is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kia Ora Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. Happy Hump Podcast. Thank you for staying with us. Episode 5, Season 16. We have a full house. We have Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, Tony.
And we have two Absolute Rally gurus presented, whatever you want to call them, together in the same place at the same time on a little bit of a date. Bless them. Jack and Ryan, hello.
Hello. I'm pleased we've not been blocked from this episode of Absolute Rally.
No, you haven't been blocked from Absolute Rally. Interesting that, really, isn't it? Thank you for leading me there. I'm not going to go there until it's been through our legal team. I don't think I'm allowed to say, but still, there you go. So you and Ryan are together in the same place at the same time. It's not very often it happens, as well documented. Bit of a date night tonight. Who's going to be mummy? Who's going to be daddy? Who's the postman? Who's the postbox, Jack?
Very good. Yeah, me and Ryan are having a little. Well, he's not having a holiday. I'm having a holiday for a few days, getting some time in after a busy weekend in Barcelona and heading to Monaco next weekend. So having a little bit of a chill in God's country.
Right. OK. You mentioned Barcelona and Monaco. It means nothing to us. Nothing. Nothing.
Well, quite a good rally happens in Monaco.
Yeah, true. I'll have that. Fair dues. Fair dues. Right, boys. I'm assuming you all stayed up to date with Chile. It was a tough weekend for me to stay up to date because we had no phone signal and we were stuck in a forest for 4 hours doing four-fifths of nothing. So I've been playing catch up on what we witnessed. Chile at its first attempt. I'll come to Jack and Ryan because they're in the same place at the same time first. So one of you two can pick up on this. As a ceremonial start, it looked absolutely epic, and I genuinely believe the bar has been raised for any new event coming into this championship.
I find myself very fortunate to be friends with Rich Milner on Facebook, not name dropping, because I know he's friends with a lot of us on the podcast and probably with a lot of people who listen to the podcast as well. But Rich is a cracking bloke, and he was putting a lot of videos and pictures up on Facebook from the ceremonial start, and I think he declared it the best one he'd ever witnessed. And Rich has been around the WRC a little while now, so for someone like that to say that it was the best day he'd ever seen is quite impressive. But yeah, they'd obviously put a massive amount of effort into making sure people were there at the start and witnessing it, and basically trying to show the world what Chile's all about. And I think they did a pretty good job of it with that event.
I think so. Trevor, I liken this. We've got Martin Holmes a little bit later on in the podcast, and I said to him, I likened it quite a lot to it, almost like a football crowd.
Yeah, and you see that as well. Rally Mexico, I think, we're really up the game when it comes to the whole social side of things and putting on the razzmatazz, and that certainly was evident with the ceremonial start and trying to keep get everybody involved in a proper party, and surely that's the right way to go. Barbados style, eh, Ryan?
Yeah. And even to get some atmosphere around it, I mean, it is all a good thing, isn't it? Because that's what, if fans are enjoying it, then it makes the whole thing, a really good experience. So anything that adds colour to the WRC or any other rally, for that matter, is a good thing.
I think so. Right, as you were last to speak, and I haven't really come to you yet. As a spectacle, we kept on hearing about day one was similar to this, day two was similar to Wales, day three was similar to Finland. What did you take from the rally?
Well, like you said, it was difficult for you to keep up with. I had a 13-hour time difference, I think, to keep up to date with Rally Chile. And obviously I've flown in just for the Absolute Rally podcast again. So, you know, it's nice to be here, obviously. And particularly with Jack, of course. But I think, like you said, I mean, we heard comments immediately that it was similar to Wales, and the conditions were certainly similar to Wales at one point, albeit a little bit warmer. But it's, it did look very European in terms of its backdrop. We've mentioned this before. It's great to see a new challenge. It's great to see different rallies in the championship. It's interesting, and I'm sure we'll come to it in a little while about events starting in the same place year on year. I do think, WRC should offer a challenge, and drivers using pace notes that they've used 10 or a dozen times before does take something, to me, it takes a little bit away from rallying. And nice to see a different challenge in there. And it was also interesting to see, obviously there was challenges on the recce with the conditions, and it was interesting to see those that were capable of making a new set of notes and driving to them, and those that were really struggling for confidence on the first day. No coincidence that the people that managed it best are the ones that we see at the front regularly.
Trev, you and I spoke quite at length about notes last week, and so did Killian Duffy when he joined us as well. We were somewhat, I was genuinely somewhat surprised when I looked at that, and following on from what Ryan just said there, to see Sebastian Loeb's perhaps a little bit slow out the blocks on the Friday, didn't have a great shakedown, and you thought, you know, could this be it? Is this the beginning of the end? How wrong was we?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was a performance of the rally. A couple of things that you mentioned before, of course, there was fog on the recce, which didn't help some confidence in some of the stages, and that's understandable. If you can't see beyond the end of the bonnet, then it's going to be a bit more difficult in the longer straights with kinks and things like that. Loeb was just exceptional. I didn't actually see his shakedown time, but it did take him a little while. The first three stages, I think, on the first day, that was about it. And once he got into the afternoon, setting fastest times, almost pipping Ogier, and just a true, you know, 45, 46 years of age now. Just incredible pace. If you look at that compared to some of the guys who've been in cars 2 years, 3 years now, it's just a different class.
Jack, obviously your hero. Were you troubled? Obviously you were otherwise engaged, all joking aside, in your day job now, as probably we should call it. But were you a little bit troubled at first when you seen the times that perhaps Loeb was putting in?
No, not really. I think you expect a certain level of performance from Sebastian, and he's intelligent enough to know that if he's not on the pace, that he drives at the pace that he's comfortable with, and that usually means people falling at the wayside, as we saw with the likes of Thierry Neuville and things like that. You pick up positions. So, you know, Sebastian hasn't had to do that many times in his career. He's usually leading from the front. That's how he won all his championships. But also, I think he's at that age now, very sensible enough to know that he's not going to be the fastest on every single stage. He knows he's not as committed as maybe Tanaka, Thierry Neuville, and you know, those kind of guys are, you know, a lot more committed than he will be, especially as they're in the car every week, racking up hundreds of miles of testing as well as doing every single event. So I think it's just, I think his approach is very sensible. It's the approach of someone who knows he's not quite at the top of his game anymore, and isn't able to be at the top of his game because he's not committed to the WRC in that way anymore. So I think it was the correct approach from him, and just goes to show when he's asked to turn on the pace like Hyundai did, and they said, you know, go and chase Sebastian Ogier down, he did, and you know, he's very close to beating him. So I'm sure if Sebastian Loeb had started that rally in a different way, you know, he might have beaten Sebastian Ogier, but also he brought the car home, scored another, you know, a good set of points for Hyundai, which is at the end of the day what he's been employed to do this year, and what his team leader didn't do.
Well, you've just took me where I wanted to go next with Rye. We've all been quizzical, critical, whatever ill you want to finish a sentence with about Hyundai's driver lineup. But, you know, they're comfortably now in the lead of the manufacturers, right? What do we know?
they've got a good driver lineup, haven't they, Hyundai? So it's, you know, they've obviously got a choice of drivers, but it certainly wasn't Thierry Neuville's weekend. A frightening accident. Trev actually sent me a link. I hadn't seen it at the time, but Trev sent me a link to one of the pieces of video footage, and you know, you could hear Thierry changing up before the crest, and you know, you could hear him coming at when he knew what was going to happen. Frightening speed. So it just shows how easily it can go wrong as well. We probably take it for granted. It's very rare, actually, we see the best three that we talk about. It's very rare that we see them make a big mistake now, and it's just shows how badly wrong it can go very quickly. He wasn't far offline at all, and it was a nasty accident.
I couldn't agree more. But Trev, keeping with Hyundai, and we'll come to Andreas. after a strong Argentina, which I think you and I spoke about it a couple of episodes ago, an event which he likes, an event he enjoys. And I think in the preview we did last week, we reiterated that point, but very much all at sea. And I was trying to think, Trev, how long this is now being going on for. And it kind of feels like most of his Hyundai eye career.
Yeah, you got to fear for it. Like, he was almost 5 minutes off the lead at the end of the rally, I think. And I didn't see any big problems that he had along the way. But it's not just him. I'll definitely fear for him. Definitely Lappi. Even Yari Matti. And you're going to start to see Neville, Tanak and Ogier starting to up the ante within their teams to try and get a number two to support them. Because back to what was happening the last 3 years, especially Ogier, he's not going to be happy if he doesn't have a teammate trying to take points away from the others. So from that point of view, it's going to be interesting to see how those guys recover. And again, a confidence thing. If you've had accidents or if you're off the pace, then you start thinking about it too much. And there's a lot of that going on, and there's certainly 3 or 4 people there should be very worried. And they need to do something. They need to bring their A game to the next few rallies. And that's got to happen soon.
Jack or Ryan, you can take this one. Just following on from what Trev's just said, actually, and it's something that crossed my mind. You know, it's not unusual to see, or it certainly hasn't been over the last year or two, to see drivers benched in inverted commas. And, you know, Sebastian Ogier does perhaps need some support. Could we see, you know, Lappi perhaps benched and somebody brought in, whether it's a Craig Breen or someone like that, just to come in and score points and basically prop it up and get finishes? Could we see that?
It's possible. I mean, if you look back at this time last year, a certain Mr. Meek found himself out of seat at Citroën. It's a very similar time of year. So you know, it's clear that Citroën are in that position. You know, they're willing to make decisions like that if they feel like they're not getting the maximum out of their, or the driver isn't getting the maximum out of the car. So yeah, you know, it's a distinct possibility. And you know, Ezepec has struggled for, well, we're looking at a season and a half of struggles now, aren't we? He seemed very comfortable in the car in 2017 when he was pretty new to the WRC and still learning a lot of the events, but had that famous win in Finland, and it looked like he was going to build on that and really, you know, become one of the kind of challengers for the WRC, really, especially with how competitive the Toyota was. But you know, we saw through last year, there was just something not right there. I've discussed it on the podcast many, many times, and you know, whether it's a confidence issue or whether he knew he was going to Citroën and he struggled for motivation a bit, I don't know. I don't think any of us will ever know. But what we do know is that his level of performance is not fantastic right now, and it's particularly hurting Citroën because we've only got 2 cars. So whereas Hyundai have had struggles with the likes of Mikkelsen, Padden, and even Sordo to a smaller extent, they've always had that third car there to pick up the extra points they've needed, whereas Citroën don't have that luxury at the minute. So they've got to think seriously about what they're trying to achieve this year. It's, you know, it's very clear they weren't going for the manufacturer's title, so maybe they'll leave Ezepeca in and hope that he can regain the form. So they could go both ways with that decision, I think.
Right, there's definitely almost like a Champions League standard, to use a football analogy again, as much as I don't like to use any analogy from any other sport when we're talking about rallying. But you start to look now at the driver standings, and you know, it doesn't even need the driver standings now. We look at the top three in the top three Champions League, you know, Oit Tanak, Sebastian Ogier, Thierry Neuville, and then we've just got this tier just below. We're already got our mid-table drivers, and I'd say probably Elvin's at the top of the mid-table drivers, and then we work our way down. But as you know, Trev's just said, there's several drivers who are very, very good chances of being relegated.
Yeah, well, like you said, it's just such a clear division at this stage of the season. You know, you've got Chris Meek's at fourth in the points on half of the score of really any of the top three, and Elvin just a point behind him. It's certainly those three again, a three horse race. We're maybe not surprised by that, but yeah, I mean, certainly Ezepeca Lappi. Yeah, we talked about, was it a risk for Citroën to take him on, and I didn't really expect him to struggle again. You know, he has shown so much speed in his career, more so than a lot of junior drivers. You know, he was alongside Pontus Tiedemann for a while, and you know, I think Lappi looked outstanding against Tiedemann at a similar level, and to see him struggle the way he is unfortunate. You touched on Andreas Nicholson there. I mean, and as Trevor said, Andreas needs to start bringing his A game. But if a confidence boost like Argentina doesn't do it for you, then it is a worry for him. And yes, this rally, like we just talked about, this rally was all about confidence because of the issues on the recce, because of the conditions on the first day. But yeah, wow. I mean, how many drivers were... We talk about it often, this confidence, this feeling, whatever, but I don't think I've ever heard a rally where so many drivers are struggling for it. But it is clear that you know, those that are struggling on a regular basis struggled massively here. We just to jump ahead a little bit, and you mentioned Elvin there. You know, it was quite interesting. Elvin had a pretty good rally. He wasn't quite on the pace, but he had a pretty good rally. And to be a minute and a half down at the end of a rally not that long ago would have been right in contention. But it just shows the level at the front at the minute.
Just with regards to just and again, we're not picking on him, but just going back to Lappi, you know, there's been reports after the weekend that Sebastien Ogier is putting Citroën under pressure for upgrades and stuff like that. And he's clearly driving around problems, set up problems. Apparently they found a little bit after Argentina and you know, they've dialed that into the car. But, you know, were we in a situation with Lappi that perhaps, you know, the Toyota was given to him as a good working car, and that's where the results came from? Whereas when there's some issues that need to be sorted, or maybe some issues that need to be driven round right, he's just not experienced enough.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. You know, you're right. If you're an experienced driver and you've seen it all before, it does give you an ability to drive around some fundamental problems. But I don't think it is just that at play, because last year's Toyota, obviously, as we saw, normally was the fastest car on many of the rallies, or certainly, you know, towards the end of the season last year, and Lappi still couldn't make it work. And yes, now he's in a difficult car, and there is some drivers who can make a difficult car work, and other drivers need a perfect car to perform, and that isn't something new. You know, we've seen a lot of drivers over the years like that. Didi Auriol's one that springs to mind. Auriol could be blindingly fast in a car that was set up for him, but maybe less so in a car that didn't work for him. But you're right, if Lappi couldn't make the Toyota work last year, and that was clearly a good car, that, you know, it's not helping him that he's got to drive around issues and he's struggling for confidence.
Folks, we're going to go to a little break. If you haven't got the answers in yet for the competition, please get them in. As I keep saying this, but I know the designs have gone to Dan at We The Terrace, so the mugs will be getting released soon. We've got loads of right answers. We've got a couple of wrong answers, believe it or not, as well. But if you could get your answers into us at studio@absoluterally.co.uk, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally with Kielder. Whether it's the car, the service, the tools, the mechanics matter.
There's 15 more seconds to fill.
That's it, Tony. Car sounds?
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. As I say, get those answers in, studio@absoluterally.co.uk. Listen, we're going to carry on with Chile. Trev, Ryan's just been talking about Elvin now. Obviously, he had that off on Argentina. Again, I make reference to this a little bit later on, but I'm so glad that rock moved to get rid of some of that energy. But I think he needed a probably just a steady result. As Rice said, you know, probably a year or two ago, 1 minute 30 odd seconds behind the leaders wouldn't have been such a negative kind of result. It's not a negative result, far from it, but you know, he has been mixing it at times this year, but I do think he just needed a finish after that off on Argentina.
Yeah, it's a good result for Elvin, definitely, given all those things considered. Sunderland was going okay at times as well, but you know, he finished what a place behind him. But you'd have to say if Ogier was in that jar, he'd be up at the front as well. So listen, there's no excuses getting into Portugal. Everybody knows they're going. The stages there will suit everybody. So everybody flat out in Portugal, and we'll see where the second tier ends up. But yeah, the top three are always going to be the top three, I think, this year.
Okay. Okay. Can we talk about the Chris Meek incident, boys?
Ryan will talk to you about this one all day.
Okay. Well, we've had different perspectives. I've heard different perspectives on this. Go on, Ryan Champion. You go first.
Well, yeah, it's fair to say there's been a little bit of debate on it. I mean, firstly, you know, a control is the same as Parc Fermé. You're allowed to perform limited functions on the car with permission, the permission of a marshal. You can change a windscreen with permission of the clerk of the course. So in theory, you could remove a windscreen, but you have to have permission to do it. Now, I think we all know what happened now. Chris Meek got into the control, and Chris and Seb have said that they saw that the after their roll, the screen was starting to give way when they were in the control. Now, we can only, they're the only people who know the answer to that. Everybody can speculate. They're the only people who can actually say that's when they realised they needed to remove it. For me, therefore, if they felt that, the only thing they could do was remove it there and then. You know, some people have suggested they could have started the stage and removed it. Never an option in a million years. A bonded screen is a hard thing to get out, smashed or not. Very, very difficult to do. You'd only attempt it in the stage if you really had to, if you'd had an accident, but you certainly wouldn't do it by choice. So if given their situation, the screen was starting to fall in, the only place you could take it out was in the control. Now, the only thing they could potentially have done different is try to get permission, but normally they haven't got time to do that, you know, in a control situation. So, yeah, they had to do it. I think for me, the big issue is the penalty they were given, you know, for going the wrong way at a triangle in Argentina, which is a shortcut ultimately. They got a 10-second penalty, and that was gaining an advantage. Here, there was no advantage gained whatsoever, and they were given a time penalty that not only penalised them in the rally, it put them back two places behind the WRC2 cars that they tried very hard to get past. But the other thing, Jack and I were just talking about this off air, the other thing that I find annoying about it is, because the stewards, all right, you know, often stewards' decisions are after the rally. Fair enough, I get that. But, you know, the annoying thing about the penalty they've issued is Chris drove hard all day on the Sunday to get past those two cars in front of him. If he'd known that he was going to be put back behind them, he might as well have just trundled on Sunday like he has done in the past and aimed purely for the power stage points with new tyres. So, you know, it was a double whammy for him because he pushed hard, wore his tyres out and then got put behind those two runners. So I think, fair enough, the stewards had to look at it because he didn't have permission to do what he did. Fair enough if they want to penalise him, but it wasn't a performance enhancing thing by any means, quite the opposite. So give him a reprimand or at worst a 10-second penalty like you gave him last time.
Trev, have you got anything to add to that, or should we just move on?
No, a couple of things. One word that doesn't seem to have come out in all the debate that's gone on is this word precedence. Who would be a steward for a start? Who would be a steward? It's like being a traffic warden or a referee in football. So precedence, so the first time I remember, Ran will remember, used to be able to change a punctured tyre in a control area. That stopped about 15, 16 years ago. I think it was Kulig changed a tyre one year we were competing against him and he got a 2-minute penalty. I've no doubt the stewards have a list of offences that are all logged in some sort of a spreadsheet. So the precedent is the key, and that's what they referred to as part of their explanation for giving a one-minute penalty. So for me, the guys definitely knew they shouldn't be working on the car. They've got to decide, can we go to the stewards and convince them that it's a safety thing? That's one thing. The second thing for me, really, is the penalty itself. The penalty, it should be a minute or not. So consequences, other consequences you could put down to safety is if you knock a wheel and the wheel's sitting at 45 degrees to the road and you're heading into a stage where lots of people stand on either side of it, you could start to quote safety around that. So there has to be some sort of a rule, clearly, and it's down to interpretation of what's safe and what's not safe, and then taking your chances that you can convince the stewards that it's related to safety. That's really what it is for me.
Okay, Jack, are you just gonna let Ryan and Trev have this one, because I'm prepared to.
I think they've done a very good job explaining it and summed up both, you know, sort of corrected some of the incorrect stuff that's been put out there and on social media. Is one of the great things about social media is you get instant reaction to things, but it also means people who don't quite understand the regulations properly come out with all sorts of nonsense that just has got nothing to do with the incident. So it's great that Trevor and Ryan have been able to sort of correct that. But I'd also add that, you know, a reprimand after the rally would have been a much better thing to do. Also, how often do, you know, Trevor mentioned precedent. We haven't got a precedent of this happening for a long time in terms of windscreen being kicked out of control and that kind of thing. So if you're a steward, you've got to look at that and give them a reprimand and fine them, and then put a thing around to the teams reminding them that they shouldn't be doing that, because it's very, very clear. We've got all this onboard footage now. We've got all this information, this brilliant tracking data, everything. It's very, very clear that no performance advantage was given from what they did. So that for me is a reprimand and a circulation of a document to say, listen, lads, don't be doing stuff in controls. This one wasn't a performance enhancer, but you know, let's just make sure we're not doing this and give them a reprimand to remind the teams what the rules are.
You say it wasn't performance enhancing. Did they go faster still?
Yeah, but
I know. I'm just playing.
Just come to you, Trev, on that. Do you think? So, you know, what do you think would have happened if they'd contacted the clerk of the course, if they'd been able to, if they'd had time to?
I think he would have said no. I definitely think he would have said no, but it's interpretation of what work you're going to do. And if you can explain it in a way where they get it, or you can video it or do something along those lines, then yeah. That's what I potentially would have done, is take a phone out and start videoing. And then you've got a precedent. But yeah, we could talk about it for another while. There's no point, I don't think.
Do you remember the incident where Burnsy changed the alleged puncture in the park firm or the control area?
I was there.
and go on, explain a little bit more about that for those that probably don't know the story.
Yeah, probably don't need to on here, but out in due course, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, he changed the puncture and gained an advantage in terms of road position. That's probably the best way to put it, isn't it?
Allegedly.
Yeah, well, if you've got a puncture, you need to change it, don't you?
Moving on, because I've got a funny feeling we're going to get into a lot more trouble this week without somebody else coming after us to take us to court. So, where are we? I'm not even going to... I was going to go WRC2, I was going to go to Ryan, but I know Ryan only gets angry by that as well, so I probably won't.
This time the pro runners beat the non pro runners, which at least doesn't make a mockery of the class that the rest of the rallies have. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, congratulations to Calibrov and Pera, and obviously good finish for Gus Greensmith. Had some issues, but will be in the big car, in inverted commas, on Portugal, and we'll try and grab him before then as well. Boys, before we go to any other business, have we got anything else we want to get off our chests about Rally Chile before we move forward?
No.
The silence is deafening. There you go. Have you all got any other business for this week?
Yeah.
Thanks. Yes. I like the way you're being very decisive, Jack. Like, you've done a survey the other two as well before we started this. Good.
Well, that next one.
Well, that's fair. As you shouted first, Jack, can I have your any other business for this week, please?
You can. As I've spoken about many times on the podcast, is a gent who was a double European rally champion in the 80s called Fabrizio Tabaton, and it's his birthday today. And it reminds me of my favourite rallying story, which was the 88 Manx, which I'm sure I've spoken about on this podcast before, but I like this story so much. I don't care if anyone else likes it, I'm just going to tell it anyway. So obviously everyone knows Patrick Snyers, Forceful Driving, won that event by quite a margin. Fabrizio Tabaton, I think, was already European champion at that point, and it was his second after 86 when he won it in the Delta S4. He was in an Integrale in 88, and I'm pretty sure either he wrapped up the championship on that event by finishing, or he'd already won it heading in. But a great story, I think. Fabrizio Tabaton protesting Patrick Snyers for what he thought was some illegal service in and presented some pictures to the clerk of the course. The clerk of the course then actually displaying Tabaton's car. And then when the rally was coming to an end, there was a Griffoni who were running Tabaton's car, a service barge stuck in a marsh, and the pro drive guys pulled the Griffoni service barge out as a brilliant sort of ironic finish to the event. So yeah, one of my favourite rally stories. But happy birthday for Fabrizio Tabaton, and be careful who you protest on a rally.
Wasn't there a second part to that, in that the pictures were actually Robert Drugman's anyway, not Patrick Snyder's?
Absolutely,
and he'd already retired from the rally.
Absolutely correct. Robert Drugman's had already retired, so the pictures were actually of his car and not of Snyder's car. A very similar livery, although one was a BMW M3 and one of them was a Sierra Cosmo, so completely different cars with similar liveries. But yeah, if you're listening to the podcast, Fabrizio Tabaton, happy birthday to you, and if you want to come on the show anytime, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely, there you go, couldn't have put it better myself. Ryan Champion is your next to Jack Benning, you go next.
Well, mine sort of links into what we were just talking about earlier on with drivers, and I think your favourite way of describing this, Tony, is this glass ceiling that you keep talking about, and drivers, you know, drivers trying to get through it. And, you know, recently we've seen Lappi make the jump. We've seen Timo Sunninen. We've seen, unfortunately, Craig come up and go back down again. We're on about Lappi, Mickelson, you know, having issues. Timo Sunninen is getting faster, but to me, still needs to show more regular pace. But, you know, obviously it's Cali Rovanperä. We know he's going to be fast, and we know he's probably going to be in a world car very soon. But where are the replacements then? Yep, Craig Breen's doing everything he can, and Craig Breen should be back in WRC next year. Rovanperä, maybe. Who else?
Well, again, we're in this thing at WRC too. We'd like to think we'd see Gus moving forward.
Pontus Tiedemann's one who's obviously kind of there or thereabouts and has won WRC2, but I think he did a decent job when he came in. I think Monte Carlo was a silly event for him to start with. Not particular tarmac. Obviously, he's more at home on gravel and snow, so he did Monte as what he described as a bit of a warm-up event for Sweden, which sounds silly when you say it out loud, and I think in hindsight was not the best decision to make. I understand why he did it, because obviously you want to get up to speed in a 17 car, and the speed that you're going in those cars you can't really replicate. So completely understand why he did it. I think just in hindsight, it's probably an ill-fated move. But I think I'd like to see him get a few more chances to see, you know, how good he actually is on multiple events. It's difficult to go in, as we've seen with many drivers, difficult to go in and do one event against the likes of Neuville, Tanak, Ogier, when they're doing hundreds of miles testing, then rallies, they're working on the setup of the car continuously, and Tiedemann's to jump in a quite difficult position. So I'd like to see him get a few more chances. But yeah, take Ryan's point. Actually, we're at a point where it's very difficult to break through. But also, it seems to be we've moved into that sort of, I think we have like a 2-year role in Lull where we have three or four drivers who are ready to come in, or we don't have any. So and Ryan's waving at me as if he's going to say something. So I'm going to pass it to him now.
I was just going to say, to put it another way, for Trevor maybe to come in, if you take the current top three drivers in WRC out of it, take Cali Rovanperä out of it, who else is a potential world champion in the making?
It's a difficult one, and I think Hayden Paddon, obviously someone we haven't mentioned, and did get his chance to a certain extent, but it'd be nice to see him come back. I think a lot of things have happened in Hayden's career, and I think I don't think he's ever had a full season where nothing's gone wrong and something hasn't affected him. So I would personally I think it would be fair for him to have another chance. It's obviously difficult for Highlander to do that when they're rolling so many good drivers around and trying to, you know, suit their best lineup. But I don't think it'd be a bad idea for one of the other teams to take a gamble on Hayden Paddon at all.
There you go. there you go. Well, I think it'd be interesting to see all the lineups next year. Let's not start a silly season again, Jack Bengen. Let's not go there. Trevor Agnew, you're any other business?
Couple of things. First off, the last time, Jack, you told the story about the Manx, I did remind you that Tabaton was run by Grafoni because he owned the company. So that's who ran us in the 206 that year. So my only other business, actually, I was very lucky today to have a guided tour of Hornby Models, who are the right shoulder for Skillextric cars. And interesting what Ryan was talking about there, because we had this conversation. I had a conversation with the chief researcher there. I was quite lucky that we had a Skillextric car made of our 2001 Rally GB, which I'll hopefully go to get another one of those coming up soon.
Yeah. Do you know what? If Jack feels like it later, he can actually have a spin in your S7 Subaru.
Really?
Yeah.
You've got it?
Yes.
A Skillextric car?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. So
there's too much man love going on in this.
And I was just about to say, it's a bit weird, isn't it? I inwardly cringed at that point. But anyway, go on, carry on, Trev.
So on this tour roundup, when I was talking to the researcher, he said that we don't do rally cars anymore. I said, why is that? He says, well, you've only got the manufacturers, but you don't have any private cars, you know. And he started to cite some of the private and show me a couple of models. He says, that doesn't happen anymore. He says, we produce the RS, we've got the RS, and we've got that, and that's it. And going back to what Ryan is saying, it's simply because there's no privateers running what we used to call 2017 cars, or clearly 2019 now, but there's no privateers with nice, interesting liveries. So having a look around the models, the one that shone for me was the Mark 1 Escort in Mexico, white with a red stripe down it. So my question to you throughout the world is, what's your favourite Skillextric livery, and which one did you have?
I didn't have any. I was too poor.
Good.
My dad's got the Stobart set of the, I think it's a Mark 1 Escort and the Mark 2 Escort, in like a collection case, which is quite nice. I'm not the world's biggest fan of the Stobart livery, but those two old cars with the kind of newer livery look quite cool.
Okay.
There is, it came out a few years ago, a Bertie Fischer Mark II Escort. When Bertie, I think it was a white car with like the the Castrol stripes on it with the Fischer engineering on it, and that looks beautiful as a Skillextric car.
Okay, right.
It probably had the Bush Performance Centre on it somewhere, which is Sydney Mix. Chris Meek's dad, who prepared the car from.
I'll take a picture of it, because that's on a shelf at my dad's, that one.
Okay. Right. My new business for this week. We've just mentioned the Manx. Jason Pritchard managed to equal Kenny McKinstry's 5 wins at the weekend. Now, we've mentioned the Manx before, and I'm not going to go on and on about the stages, but to be fair, obviously Jack's just been talking about it as well. The reason why I wanted to mention it, and I hadn't even realised this until we started doing this particular podcast, I wanted to mention the 05 Focus, which Jason Pritchard used to win the Manx. The Plains Rally at the weekend was run by Ewan Thorburn in an 05 Focus. Obviously, Trev, you sat in an 05 Focus as well with Stobart livery, ironically, what we've just been talking about. My question to you boys is the 05 Focus the best car that M Sport have ever made?
I think it's definitely, in M Sport's opinion, the best tarmac car they ever made until they made the 2017 WRC car even. Sorry I jumped in there, but I know I spoke to the likes of, well, P&R Ben runs all these 2005 Focuses, and obviously he used to work at M Sport and has got a long history of running Focuses and things like that, but he's got a lot of parts knocking around. And I think some of the drivers who are switching to them now, likes of like Hugh Hunter, Damien Cole, talked about Ewan Thorburn already, Jason Pritchard, have found the 2 litre cars easier to drive than the 2016 cars. I think the 2 litre cars tend to be a bit easier to bail you out of difficult situations, I think, than some of the newer cars. It's a bit more technical to drive and to understand as well. So I think we've seen a bit of a trend over the last 12 months of people switching back towards these 2005 cars. And obviously Jason Pritchard has been driving his for quite a few years now and done very well in the Manx. And I think he's sort of set a bit of a standard for people to go, yeah, you know what, competitive car and still can be. So it's great to see those cars still, you know, still competing, and the fact that it still parts with them, because one of the big issues we have now, obviously, with that generation of 2 litre car is like the Subaru Imprezas are basically impossible to map, and parts are running out for all sorts of that generation of cars. So it's fantastic that there's still parts around and that those cars are still able to run, because they're great to watch.
I'm glad we got your input. Thank you for that, Jack. I was expecting to get that much input from the man who's actually sat in one. So there you go. Trevor Agnew, when you sat in an 05 Focus, did you imagine all those years ago that we'd be talking about this some 15 years later as the go-to car now for clubmen?
Oh, it was an awesome piece of kit. I think ours is about 420 grand at the time. I remember the rear spoiler, the roof spoiler, was something like £7,000. Is the maddest thing ever. But I think the 2002, 2003, if you spoke to Christian Lorio, that's the one that really was the big breakthrough for him. And I know for a fact that Chris Meek was part of the engineering team then, and he had big input on that car as well. I think at M Sport, if you ask them, that was a big breakthrough, that one, 2002, 2003, whichever those 2 years it was.
There you go. There's no other any other business from me. I know people are probably expecting another any other business from me, but probably if I did say something about any more any other business, I'd probably be blocked on social media. But still, there you go.
We've got the whole podcast about talking about Ken Block. Sorry.
If you want to talk about Ken Block, you can if you want.
I want to know how big the spin was on Saturday.
You want to know how big the spin was on Saturday?
It was Jim Carner.
It was. Genuinely, it was a flat in fifth type moment where I was coming down to what was a hairpin, and there was never in a month of Sundays was I ever going to make the hairpin. So it was a big, big overshoot, spin, and get it back on the road.
So did you fall off or something?
My head was falling off. I think that's fair to say. I lost my head a little bit, and then I got a puncture, which was exciting. Flat and fifth with a front puncture, trying to chase people down. But yeah, there's a lot more which I'm sure will come out about that event as time goes on, shall we say.
Well done in getting third anyway. Missed out in 2 seconds, was it?
Yeah, that was a little bit annoying as well. I ran the way it worked, we had to run heavy fuel, so I ran one spare. Not everybody made the same decisions to me. There wasn't management allowed on the event. So we ran heavy fuel and one spare. So once I'd had a puncture, I knew I still had a stage and a massive, ridiculously long road section to complete. So we decided to just drive to the finish. But still a little bit annoying when you find out you've dropped the position by 2 seconds when you do that. But anyway,
at least you only missed that by 2 seconds and not 4 hours.
The 4 hours was the fact we were parked up for 4 hours. It was the longest delay I've ever had in between finishing a stage in the morning and starting one in the afternoon. Ever. I think I've done a rally in 4 hours.
I bet everyone on this podcast has done a rally in 4 hours apart from me.
Yeah, probably. No, I'm not even going to go there. Don't, you'll get me into trouble. Right. So there's already stuff going on, so I'm not going to say any more. Right, boys, you can all stand down now. Jack and Ryan, you can go away and hold hands. And Ryan, is Jack got trousers on that fit him?
Yeah, he has actually.
Good move.
They're actually long enough that he can turn them up.
The irony is in this weather, he should probably have shorts on.
I did see somebody on social media this week suggesting a minimum trouser length in rounded
out. Cheers, Bertie, you're an absolute legend. I really enjoyed that comment, it made me laugh.
There you go. Boys, you go away and have fun. Trev, you go away and enjoy the sun. And folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-lift crest, 8-6 right, minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 on lift crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And as ever, it's a joy and an honour to welcome back esteemed journalist Martin Holmes back to Absolute Rally. Hello, Martin.
Hi. Morning.
Morning. It's good to have you back. As ever, at this point of our seasons, as we call them on the podcast, I always like to try and welcome you back to kind of look at not only the last WRC event, which of course was the first event over in Chile, but also where the championships at the moment. But I'd like to talk about Chile first and foremost. We'll start with the horrible accident at Ernie Vell, and the reason why I want to start there is because up until that point, it looked like he was on to score really, really good solid points for Hyundai and of course for his championship as well.
Well, that's true, but there are a lot of things which are obviously in the post-mortem from the rally, which they're obviously going to have to address for the future. But it was good to see a rally, and it's good to see a determined group of people running that rally. It was good.
I a lot's been said about the start and the ceremonial start, and I likened it to coming from my first city, a football match. The way a crowd, whether it be Anfield or Goodison or wherever it may be, you know, when a crowd gets into something, it creates an atmosphere without a shadow of a doubt. And clearly we had an atmosphere.
Yes. You're talking about the format and the structure of the rally?
Yeah, well, it's just more the ceremonial start. I think more than anything, you know, you've seen there was people there and they were passionate and they were really wanted the rally there. You could just tell the excitement of having, you know, the elite of rallying in their country. You know, the fans.
People like Mexico do it to a T. They do it beautifully as well.
Yeah. But I guess they've had a bit more practice than Chile. I think that's where I'm getting to. For a first ceremonial start, I don't know who sent the memo round to the locals and the rally community in Chile, but clearly the memo went out and they came.
Yeah, true.
And that's what, you know, Rich Milner's done some great, he did a day-by-day account on Twitter, just different photographs and things like that. And he was showing images of, you know, them throwing, you know, bits and pieces out to the crowd and things like that. And it just looked like you could tell something was going on. And I just, when you see something like that and you hear about, and we'll talk a little bit about calendars a little bit later on before I let you go, because it's always good to get your input on these things as well. When events are being looked at, perhaps for, dare I say, rotation or maybe even to be dropped, these are the things that stay with people, don't they? You know, these are the things that people remember. You know, of course, there was little things that happened on the rally, which maybe we'll talk about. But those things are forgotten when it's a big event and the stage is a challenge and every day is different. And, you know, we keep on hearing analogies of day one was like this and day two reminded us of Wales and day three reminded us of Finland. It just brings something that perhaps maybe other events need to start looking at themselves and thinking, if this is what their first attempt's like, we need to raise the bar.
Well, are we talking about the established rallies in the championship, the long-standing ones, or are we talking about the other candidate rallies?
I think a bit of both, Martin, to be fair. I think a bit of both. I think, you know, I don't think anyone can be lax now. I don't think anybody can relax into the fact that they think it's a given the WRC are going to come to them.
Yes, but looking at it from a different position, don't forget that the sport is as it is because of everything that has gone on in the past and all the places and all the ideas and all the people involved. If we're talking about telling other people to pull their socks up, you're left with a whole lot of people who don't have any form behind them, and I'm not quite sure the championship wants to go too deep into having new people.
Okay. Well, if we can talk a little bit more, as I say, about the events and about Hyundai and about maybe the fact that, you know, a horrible accident, but what's happened with Thierry now not scoring, as Seb Ogier has, and of course Oitanak has, and they've all scored on every event so far this season. Now we've got a non-score. It's kind of made it a lot more interesting all over again, even though if it wasn't interesting enough, dare I say.
Yes, I think so. I was just looking at the people. I mean, Sebastian, Ott, Meek, and who's the other one? They have all scored on each rally so far, and that's quite good.
We all look through, I suppose, through our memories of rallying WRC and things, and you know, it's, for me, I'm nearly 45 years old, and for me, this is damn near a peak for me for rallying as we know it at the moment.
A peak, you said.
A peak, I think so. The only downside of a peak, of course, Martin, is that there always comes a lull, and I don't even want to get into the lull. I don't want to do anything negative, but I think we're at something which I think is very, very special with four manufacturers.
I mean, the way that they are all capable of scoring fastest times, all capable of leading the rally. I think this is a championship, well, I mean, last year as well as this year, that people will remember for a long time.
And we've all got, you know, there's rally winners in all the teams. You know, dare I say, you know, M Sport are the juniors, I suppose, and all this. And, you know, poor Elvin was so, so close on Corsica. He would have been a rally winner this season, bar, you know, a puncture, of course, if some buts were pots and pans, et cetera, we could say there are lots of drivers. But, you know, we would have had an M Sport winner as well, barring a puncture. And that, again, I think makes it a very, very unique championship. Having had dominance, and we're going to talk about the Sebs shortly, but you know, we're not quite getting dominance at the level that we had with Ogier, with perhaps with Loeb. You could say that obviously Oitanak's combined, well, I seen a stat, Martin, the other day. Oitanak's fastest times equal something that Thierry Neuville and Sebastian Ogier together.
That's correct. Tanak has got 33 wins, I think.
Yeah.
Base wins. Ogier 17 and Neuville 16. Yeah, that's true.
And that's, you know, only for bad luck you would have a dominant force that is Oitanak at the moment. But, you know, that's not the way rallying works, as we all know. And, you know, I'm glad it doesn't, by the way. I'm glad it doesn't quite work like that. But I think it's proven now to be an interesting time that we've got these three drivers that, that are fighting. Now, I find it interesting that let's look at the perhaps the brands that they're driving for. Okay. We were all a little bit perhaps surprised that the line that Citroën took of just taking Ogier and obviously Escapé Calapi. We've spoke at length on this podcast about why maybe you should have a third car. It was budgets and everything else. But you've got Sebastian Ogier, who's working very, very hard to make a car which maybe is not quite right work. And, you know, he's come out already after Chile to say, we need more from this car. This car's not quite good enough. We've got Tanak with the Toyota that's had reliability problems, but there's undoubtedly probably the fastest car there. And we've got the Hyundai. And up until Loeb's performance at the weekend, the Hyundai was really, you know, Danny Sordo was very steady in it in the rounds that he's done. You could kind of say Loeb was steady as well. You know, Andreas Mikkelsen, I'd go as far as say disappointing to say the least. But Thierry was making it work.
It's interesting that we have two dominating factors at the moment. One is Tanak, who drives the Toyota, and the other is Hyundai team. And they are a long way ahead at the moment in the World Championship, and ahead of Toyota. So the two don't go together, do they?
No, and you know, we were you know, openly quite critical about, you know, that having four drivers and trying to rotate drivers and trying to you know, keep it going, and whether momentum's lost in the team when you pull a driver out and then put another driver back in. You know, but we're wrong. We shouldn't have been debating that because, as you say, Hyundai are massively ahead. But just staying with Hyundai, do you see them trying to convince Loeb to do more rounds, maybe at the expense of Andreas now?
I don't think they can convince Loeb to do anything. Loeb will do what he wants to do. It's what Loeb's other responsibilities and his not only his sporting responsibilities, but also his family responsibilities, when they all come into play as far as Loeb is concerned.
I completely agree, and he is at that level of being able to pick and choose, of course,
yeah,
what he does. I think there was a couple of people who perhaps were thinking, well, maybe this part-time program isn't going to work because he's been steady. You know, he hasn't blown anybody away as such. But I think from what we've seen by the end of the rally on Chile, the cream rises to the top, doesn't it?
I think so. Lowe's had two bad... I'm just looking through his scores at the moment. He had a 12, he had 6, he had 4, and he had 17. So far, that's not terribly impressive.
Not for Loeb, but you know, for anybody else, they'd be probably relatively happy with that. But obviously, maybe Loeb would be. We're only surmising here, but I think he looked happy to be back in the fight. Stage ends. Ogier looked slightly troubled by the fact that his fellow countryman was still there and still biting at his heels in his first gravel event in Hyundai.
Not so much fellow countryman, but his hero. Ogier is still regarding Loeb as the master of all time, even if he strives to try and disprove that fact. But it is like that with Loeb. Ogier cannot be anything other than impressed when he beats him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If we could just talk about moving forward. Yeah, I've heard various things about Citroën and the handling. Apparently they made some very, very slight changes after Rally Argentina, and that helped Ogier in Chile. But clearly he does seem to be having to manhandle it reminded me a little bit of his early time with M Sport, where he was still probably getting to grips with the car and getting the car to his liking. And I think we're seeing something similar all over again, I think. And Citroën are obviously very, very keen to keep their star man happy, and but clearly he still thinks there's a lot more to do in order for him to retain his championship.
Well, I have a feeling that the team themselves admit the fact that it's an ongoing process. It's not only the World Rally Car, but their R5 is an ongoing process as well.
Yeah, it always surprises me when we talk about the Citroën R5 car, to be honest with you, because going back to the predecessor to the current spec one, no one really got to grips with that one. And it shared a lot of the common components with the 208, and both those cars really were some way behind where the Skoda was and the Fiesta was, and maybe even where the Hyundai started. So I must admit, I was expecting a clean sheet of paper in that particular, the new car, to be perhaps a little bit further ahead. When you look at what M Sport do and when you look at what Skoda do, they're still a little bit behind where they need to be with that car. And of course, those brands, especially M Sport, use, the funds that they get from selling R5 cars, of course, to push their WRC program forward. And you would think that maybe Citroën would be trying to do that a little bit more, wouldn't you?
When you think about the development of Citroëns over the last few years, the team has been, the whole company has been in turmoil. So I think it's only now eventually beginning to settle insofar as the design of their rally cars are concerned.
Yeah, I think, I still think I don't want this to happen because I don't like dominance in anything. I think it's nice to break up dominance. I still think Sebastian Ogier will be a world champion this year. As much as I'd like to see Ogier win it, I still think Ogier will, is the wily fox that he's now become. I still think that he will manhandle that car. And, you know, again, he is still scoring really, really good points with a product that he's not happy with. And I think that marks out a true champion in every sense of the word. So I still think he is going to be world champion with that particular car. I really, really do. But does that mask perhaps the problems that they have got moving forward?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't mind getting your take on, we mentioned them very, very briefly, and you know, we've just talked, of course, about Sebastian Loeb, you know, coming in and being just phenomenal in his first gravel event in the high-end II20. Of course, his teammate on the event, Andreas Mikkelsen, has been in that car now for a couple of years, and we've debated it long and hard on this podcast about what needs to happen. Obviously, a good run on Argentina, but clearly something's not happening. I don't quite know where it starts. You know, it's been a couple of years now. There was a change of co-driver. I'm not suggesting that, you know, at all, but it was around the same time that he joined Hyundai and things changed. And it's almost like they need to start again.
I think so. And I don't know whether starting again will make it any better for him either.
You've been around and you've seen drivers, and we've, again, this is something we've talked about, where drivers do go to a team and it just doesn't work. For whatever reason, it just doesn't work. And they move on to another brand and all of a sudden it's they're amazing and they're dominating or whatever it may be. Do you see that for Andreas, or do we think that window of perhaps moving forward and challenging for a world championship is almost closed for him now?
I think he's just having trouble with the Hyundai myself. I mean, obviously, the current generation of World Rally cars is so specific in everything that either it clicks for you or it doesn't. I mean, gone, I think, are the days when you can just get any old car and through your talent and through your determination, you can still win. I don't think that happens very much now.
No. No, as you say, they're very much highly tuned race cars. If we can talk about, I suppose, somebody who's not quite having a badder season, I suppose, is Andreas Mikkelsen, but a man that's not too far behind him in the points counter either is Jari Matti Latvala. Is ever great value for TV and for Stage M reporting, calling himself various names for Stolen or a junction, but another driver really that perhaps is probably going to be getting looked at perhaps towards the end of this season, because again, it's just not happening for him.
I know, and it's worrying and it's upsetting, I think, because I don't think there's anything basically wrong with him. It's just the things don't happen in the way they should do. And he's had some technical things, but then, of course, it was more of a driving thing why he had a bad result in Chile. I worry a little bit about him.
Yeah. We do too. I think, I know he's very popular with the Japanese, and hopefully, you know, that may well keep him in a seat there. But one thing that has happened after the rally, just staying with Toyota, of course, is this penalty for Chris Meek for removing his screen.
Don't get me started on that.
I know, I do want to get you started. That's exactly why I mentioned it, to be perfectly honest with you. Go on.
I don't know what Chris thinks. He does. He seems to think that the whole world centres around him. Now, when it comes to being competitive, that's all part of the requirement for being a top star. But when he thinks that the whole sport revolves around him, and just because he makes breaks the rule, and then, I mean, I don't know whether you saw some of these tweets that he made. They're absurd. About, I don't understand the penalty, he tweeted. Well, I think everybody else does. And I think everybody else thinks that he's really doing himself no favours at all by complaining. I think it's a pity.
I do think it's a pity. I didn't see anything firsthand because I was a little bit tied up myself over the weekend. So I've watched stuff retrospectively and what happened with the accident and things like that. Do you not see the need for the screen to come out though?
As a steward said, of course it needs to come out. But you've got the road sections on which you can stop and do it. I mean, Meek forgets the fact that rules have been thrashed out over generations and few rules have been made without some fundamental reason behind them. And, I mean, the last thing people want is for cars, mechanics, drivers to be working on cars in the tense moments of the control area. And Meek can't see that, I think. I think it's just a pity. I just would like to think that his new co-driver would be able to steer him away, but I rather doubt if he will.
Well, I think it's one of those things that everybody seems to have an opinion on it, both for and against. As you say, the rule is the rule. It is in a control. You can't work on the car in the control, and that's obviously why the penalties being applied. And I don't know really. I'm 50-50 on this. I completely accept the rules, but apparently there was a delay in the control, so. They went into the control thinking that the screen was going to be okay. There was an 8-minute delay, by which time the screen started to crack and the bond started to move on the screen. So they made the decision to take it out then. And that's
all
the reason.
All they had to do is to check in, drive outside the control area and do the work on the road.
Yeah.
And Meek didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah, true. But it'll be one of those ones that I suppose that rankles on a little bit. If I can talk to you, I wouldn't mind getting your take. I don't think we've spoke about this too much. We've kind of talked about it a little bit tongue-in-cheek on other episodes of the podcast. That we had WRC2 and, of course, we had WRC2 Pro. What's your take on WRC2 Pro, Martin?
I think it's a great idea, and it's a pity that more teams haven't cottoned on to the opportunities. I mean, the idea of getting a new driver, candidate driver, you could say, learning the life of being in a team, a professional team. You get all that with this pro thing. All right, there's reasons why there are only two.
There's three now. We've got Cali Rovanpera, Mads, obviously Gus, who are obviously registered for it. And I completely agree because obviously we know a little bit about Gus. Obviously, he's grown up in the M Sport family. Mads's program's run outside of Citroën, though, isn't it? That's the thing. It's not, and you could argue, does Mads need to be learning about how to work inside a manufacturer, having drove for Citroën and M Sport in the past?
I mean, he knows all about that. I mean, he's there for another purpose, and that's the development of the R5.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very pleased for him that he's got this opportunity.
Yeah. And Cali,
nobody's going to forget him.
Yeah, no, good. Good point. But Cali's program was run by, wasn't run by Skoda. He was run by TalkSport on Chile, the team, of course, who run our own Chris Ingram in ERC. So again, you know, Cali's been through various teams, driving a Skoda. The new car is coming in Portugal. I think he's going to be driving one of those, along with, Jan Kopecky. So he'll be back under the Skoda Motorsport wing, as it were.
In Portugal. The rally in Český Krumlov this week.
Yeah.
And I think the idea is that one of them was going to rally in Czechia and the other in Portugal. I think that's the case. But we haven't seen the list from Portugal yet.
No. But you know, the only thing and we've debated it quite a lot on this podcast, is that we've got WRC2 and we've got WRC2 Pro. And I completely get what you've just said with regards to having a driver grow up through a team, which I completely get. And I think it's great. As I say, we've seen it with Gus, but I still find it, are we not confusing our public even more with WRC2 Pro and WRC2 Standard? You know,
also Formula One, you have a situation with the support championships in Formula One, and the way that those drivers can integrate into a team. And I think it could well be that WRC2 Pro was conceived with one eye looking at how things are happening in Formula One. So I think Formula One is a proven thing. I mean, young drivers who do these support races, they get into the team, they do reserve driving, test driving for the team, and I would like to see WRC2 Pro develop so more of that comes into rallying.
But before we leave Chile, I just wanted to just very, very quickly just have a look at the guys at M Sport. Elvin, again, I suppose we could talk about again. He probably needed that steady run after that. I'm glad that Rock moved in Argentina, Martin, basically, because I think the amount of energy that basically that Rock took and by moving probably was a saving grace for both him and Scott Martin. And I suppose it was just him getting back out and being not quite steady away, but getting another points finish and just getting his season back on track, really.
Of course. And it's not too late for him to get his season back on track. And not so much season, but his career back on track. And I think he's going in the right way.
Do you see, you know, I've seen an interesting interview in the preview for this event, and he was talking about, you know, his career through the Ford ladder. You know, we all remember him over here doing the Fiesta STs and then the R2 Fiesta, then Junior World Championship and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he progressed up through the ladders. But, you know, he made reference to the fact that, yeah, it has all been with a Ford, but that's not to say I wouldn't drive a different brand, which I don't know whether that was a come and get me plea to somebody, but you know, do you see Elvin in a Citroen or a Hyundai in 2020?
No, I don't actually. I think everything for Elvin depends on his work with Ford and with M Sport.
I hope he keeps his seat. You know, we would imagine Timo's seat is one that he is one of Timo Jocchi's drivers, isn't he? I have got that right before I put my foot on it. Is Timo Jocchi Timo Sunonen's manager?
Yes.
So before I put my foot in it massively, so I'm assuming probably that they're bringing some investments and that's part of his education. So to speak, but it's almost like that third car syndrome. Obviously, we had Pontus Tiedemann in it for a couple of rallies. Gus is going to be in it for Portugal, but it's almost like they need somebody else there almost to perhaps take the weight off the shoulders of certainly from Elvin and maybe even Timo.
I don't think Elvin needs weight taken off him. I mean, either he can do it or he can't, and I don't think it's anything to do with weight on the shoulders. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, we've got
pressure, which has caused him trouble.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we move on and let you go, because I'm really conscious of time, can I get your take on the calendar for moving forward? There's going to be two new events in it for next year. There'll be a slight question mark against Safari. There'll be a question mark next to it because of the candidate event isn't running until July. We had Ian Duncan as a guest on a couple of weeks ago. It was quite interesting getting his insight, obviously, to Safari gone by, but also Safari moving forward, he did have a wry smile, I imagine, when we put to him about Michel Mouton's visit, saying that perhaps it wasn't tough enough at the moment. And I wanted to get your take on that, really.
Are we speaking just about Safari?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I think it's completely right what Michel was saying. It isn't tough enough. If we want to replicate the old days of the Safari Rally, it's nothing like the same. The stages are all in compact, in areas which don't go to the far sides of the country. And I mean, the whole Safari history was going down to the coast, the stages on the way, like Taita Hills and Voy and things like that, then going north, well, let's try to work it out, northeast and then north, all different areas. Well, we don't have anything like that in the safaris this year or coming, and I don't think we can do under the format, required format of the World Championship.
Well, that the concern that we've all spoke about, and Ian raised this, and I think Ryan even spoke about it as well, is that, you know, what we can't afford to happen is the teams to have to build one-off specials anymore. That's not going to happen. We need them to bring the gravel cars that they're already using, because if we suddenly make the Safari a car-specific event again, then it's not going to work, is it?
No, it won't do. But then they won't be allowed to do it anyway, because you have limits on the number of cars, chassis you can use each year in the World Championship teams. So you certainly don't have horses for courses.
Yeah.
It's just, well, it's banned.
Deep down, do you see that asterisk being removed from next Safari and seeing it being part of the calendar the next year, or do we think it's still perhaps a little bit of a pipe dream, really?
Well, 50-50 on that one. I'm looking back at Chile and the difficulties they had, which all showed, whereas in the old days, if things went wrong in a rally like the Safari, it was all good fun. It was all part of the thing. But I mean, you had this business of that motorcyclist driving, the policeman driving, riding down the stage and causing the stage to be blocked. I mean, that sort of thing must never happen in a World Championship. And then, of course, why on earth did Nerville start the stage two on Chile? And then that had to get red flagged, because somebody had released the cars onto the stage without clearance from the security people. I mean, all this sort of thing was really, really not acceptable. I mean, this business about, oh, well, we had to cancel two of the stages because it was getting too dark. Well, that's not very funny, actually. And if somebody as well, briefed, as the people in Chile make these mistakes, how much more mistakes will happen in the candidate rallies which are coming along? I'm worried about them. And also worried, of course, about the effect on the whole credibility of the championship when long-established events are being dropped.
I think, you know, maybe it is that rosy-coloured spectacle. The name Safari, you know, it's like Monte Carlo, I suppose. You know, it's one of those names, isn't it? I think that's probably almost part of one of the reasons they want to go over to the continent in particular. But are we in agreement that Japan needs to happen?
No.
No?
No, not in agreement. I don't think it does need to happen. We had so much confusion amongst the teams when the World Championship originally went to Japan. Remember, team managers kept on saying how exciting it is to go into the Japanese market on their own terms. And, hey, come on, it didn't happen like that. Apart from sale of certain niche cars, limited, very limited, competing with Citra and other teams in Japan, did not sell any more cars to the manufacturers, yet they were believed that it would do. And then, of course, we had this whole influence of Toyota in trying to get the World Championship rally there. I am really nervous of trying to insert that event into the calendar, especially considering what we will lose if they do it.
Do you think, you know, we keep on talking about, you know, the brands that we've got at the moment, and I said last week, I don't know what other brands are out there that we could entice into the sport at the moment without going to the go-tos, which would be a Subaru and Mitsubishi. I think the Mitsubishi dream is long since sailed, personally, with the demise of Rally Art and everything else. But, you know, perhaps the hierarchy of the people in Japan seeing the rally on the doorstep, do you think perhaps that could give them a poke in the direction of maybe looking at a program in the future?
Well, give manufacturers a poke, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I think they need to look very carefully into the consequences of going into a rally there. I remember when we were in Obihiro in Hokkaido, one of the really top managers of Subaru, I don't know whether it's the CEO, but he was that level. I talked to him and everything about, he said, well, we're pleased that the sport comes here. But, I mean, choosing to go to Hokkaido was a complete mistake. Nothing happens in Hokkaido that gets reported in the newspapers in Tokyo. Now, of course, coming back into the central island, you land yourself with difficulties in the types of stages, the types of traffic situations, especially how you handle spectators on that rally. I mean, the way, I don't know whether you've been to a Japanese rally, but...
I haven't, no.
It's quite fun. Spectators are bust the places. You meet outside a given place and a lot of bus comes along. They take another 50 people along. I mean, they had whole queues of buses. Now, this isn't quite what everybody likes to do.
Yeah. You know, I suppose there's a want of me to see another brand come back, and maybe one of the Japanese brands, you know, maybe it's just me, but it'll be interesting to see who isn't on the calendar as well. I think that's the other thing which is always lost, I suppose, is who we will lose in order to gain, and I think that's going to be the troubling part. You know, there's a story that's broke this week, Martin. Just the last thing before I let you go, with regards to GB and you know, perhaps them having to move away from Wales, and obviously this team going over to Ireland has been suggested and things like that. Any thoughts on that before I let you go?
I think Oliver Chesler is very good at. Saying things without really thinking about them. And the events where he has promoted the idea of going to run the World Championship rally there, every single one of them has some queries about whether it's really such a good idea or not. I mean, look at Chile. I know that it was, except for certain mistakes that they made, was really good. But what do you think the effect of having the rally in Chile does on Argentina? I think that Argentina had a great support from commercial people because it was South America's event. Well, in one stroke, they take away the commercial value of Rally Argentina. Now, that sort of thing does not get thought through, I think, by WRC promoters. And I wish sometimes they would stop giving interviews with magazines and causing alarm like they're doing at the moment.
Yeah. I think that's a very, very good place to leave it. Martin, I thank you so much for your time as ever. It's always great to have you on when we do each of our seasons. So we will welcome you back very soon. Folks, that is the end of this week's podcast. We do appreciate the download. If you could rate, review, and leave us something on iTunes, that would be great fun. If not, spread the word, tell your friends. You know where we are every week. We'll be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.